It's the NPR News Update for Tuesday, May 21st. Minnesota's news on your schedule. I'm Matt Sepik in for Phil Picardi today. It was down to the wire last night for state lawmakers. The DFL-led legislature worked right up until the deadline to pass a budget and the tax increases needed to pay for it. You'll hear all about the final day of session ahead in the podcast, including a controversial measure that allows child care providers and personal care assistants to form unions. Also, thousands of military personnel from Minnesota are dealing with chronic physical pain, but it's not all because of combat injuries. We'll hear more on that ahead as well. Minnesota lawmakers worked until midnight last night to pass a $38 billion state budget. It includes $2 billion in tax increases that'll mainly affect high-income earners, cigarette smokers, and businesses. Now, with the session over, Governor Mark Dayton and DFL legislative leaders shift from policy to politics. They're holding a news conference to recap the session, and Republican lawmakers are traveling the state to voice their criticism of the Democrats' policies. Tom Scheck has the latest.
The theme of the 2013 session was summed up by Republican Representative Steve Draskowski of Mazeppa. Here's what he had to say during the debate on the $2 billion tax bill.
Elections have consequences. Because that path that your government was on of living within its means is coming to an abrupt halt.
Republicans and Democrats differ over whether that path was the correct one. After 10 years of budget cutting and no new taxes, Democrats took control of every part of state government. They passed a $38.3 billion two-year budget that increases funding for schools, nursing homes, jobs programs, and property tax relief. They pay for it by raising income taxes on top earners, raising cigarette taxes, and with new taxes on businesses. DFL House Speaker Paul Thiessen said Democrats made the bet that the tax hikes would be worth it.
The tough votes that they had to take on things like taxes pay off on things like investments in education, investments in job creation, investments in property tax relief.
Republicans were forced to sit on the sidelines throughout the budget debate, and nearly every chance they got, they warned that the tax hikes could dampen the state's economic recovery. Republican Senate Minority Leader David Hahn said higher taxes will prompt businesses to cut jobs, wealthy Minnesotans to move, and smokers to buy their cigarettes elsewhere.
We're not the first state that has tried to do these things, and we should learn from other places. There will be changes in behavior when you do these things, and this is what is remarkable to me. We don't learn from the past.
Since Democrats took control in the November election, Hahn and House Minority Leader Kurt Dowd have been saying the DFL majorities would overreach. Dowd says passing a bill to legalize same-sex marriage and a bill that allows at-home daycare providers to vote on whether to join a union are just two examples.
A lot of the policies that Democrats passed are pretty unpopular with the electorate, and we're going to make our case that there's a better way, and there was a better way, and I think you're going to see a pretty stark contrast.
Governor Dayton and every member of the Minnesota House is up for re-election in 2014. One of the Democrats who's expected to face a tough challenge is Joe Radinovich of Crosby. He dismissed any talk of overreach.
When you've been stuck in neutral for a decade, I think even, picking up any speed might look like overreach to some people. But, to a lot of Minnesotans, it looks like progress.
Radinovich says he expects to get a lot of attention for his vote to legalize same-sex marriage because his district supported a constitutional ban on gay marriage in November. The legislature's dramatic shift from supporting a ban in 2011 to legalizing same-sex marriage this year may be the most notable aspect of the session. DFL Representative Karen Clark of Minneapolis sponsored the marriage bill in the House.
It's been life-changing, from what I can tell, for many people, and including myself. It's a turn of history and history that's very gratifying to me. I didn't know if this would have happened in my lifetime.
Republicans did beat back some DFL initiatives, a bill that would have strengthened the state's bullying laws in schools, and a bill that would have increased the minimum wage never got final votes. And tougher gun control legislation was scrapped after fierce opposition from gun rights groups. Republican Representative Tony Cornish of Vernon Center worked hard to defeat that bill.
What you should take away from this session is learning that the The most dangerous thing in the world, it seems like, is not a criminal, because we can fight criminals off at the door, but the most dangerous thing is a politician that feels that they have to do something.
Democrats push through plans that they say will help job growth. They include state money to help Rochester handle a planned Mayo Clinic expansion, tax breaks for phase two of the Mall of America, and subsidies to help a pharmaceutical company expand in Brooklyn Park. And even with all the attention gun control and gay marriage got this year, it's likely jobs and the economy will still be the top issue in the 2014 election. Tom Scheck, Minnesota Public Radio News at the Capitol.
Besides that budget bill, lawmakers approved a borrowing plan to pay for repairs on the century-old Capitol building. And as Tom mentioned in his story, a contentious measure that allows in-home child care providers and personal care assistants to unionize also squeaked through the House on Monday after passing the Senate last week. Tim Pugmire now from the Capitol has more on those issues and others from the final day of the 2013 legislative session.
The last day of the session began with the House resuming debate on a contentious bill to allow for the unionization of two groups of government-subsidized workers, in-home child care providers and personal care assistants. Several Republicans, including Representative Linda Runbeck of Circle Pines, described the effort as a money grab by organized labor.
So you've got big unions and big government double teaming small business owners. The bottom line is, folks, what's happening is we're taking taxpayer dollars that are intended to help small children and the vulnerable elderly and disabled, and we're giving them over to the union.
The Democrats argued that the two groups of workers deserve a right to organize for collective bargaining. DFL Representative Michael Nelson of Brooklyn Park said his bill doesn't, as critics claimed, intrude on small businesses.
It also does not form or create a union or force anyone into one. It just gives those that have expressed an interest the chance to have a vote on whether or not they want to form a union.
The passage of the bill ended a 10-hour debate that stretched over more than 2 days, but it also triggered a harsh reaction from opponents on the floor to applause coming from supporters in the gallery.
There being 68 ayes and 66 nays, the bill is passed, its title agreed to.
Yeah, Mr. Speaker. Yeah, Mr. Speaker. Yes.
Mr. Speaker.
Yes, go ahead and applaud. That's right. Go ahead and let him applaud.
Mr. Speaker.
Stop. Stop.
Let him applaud.
Mr. Speaker. Clear the deck, Mr. Speaker.
We're not in charge of it. Let him applaud. They own the place.
3 days after an $800 million bonding bill failed to gain the necessary 81 House votes needed for passage, a pared-down $156 million package of public construction projects passed. The measure includes money for flood mitigation projects and improvements to the Minneapolis Veterans Home, but most of the bill, $109 million, is for the next phase of renovation work on the deteriorating state Capitol building. DFL Representative John Ward of Brainerd said keeping the renovation going is critical.
This Capitol is a 108-year-old building that's an iconic gem for the state of Minnesota. But it is at its tipping point, members. It is at its tipping point.
The backroom House negotiations to reach a deal on the bonding bill held up Senate action on the tax bill. That critical debate finally began with 2 hours remaining in the session. The DFL-backed tax bill raises more than $2 billion in new revenue through an income tax increase on the wealthiest 2% of Minnesotans, a cigarette tax increase of $1.60 per pack, and the elimination of some corporate subsidies. It pays for new spending for public education and property tax relief, as well as erasing the state's $627 million projected budget deficit. Republican Senator Julianne Ortman of Chanhassen said the tax bill is the result of excessive government spending under Democrats.
Our Minnesota State Legislature, led by the DFL, has said yes to virtually every request of every special interest group that has come and asked for something more.
Republicans also argued that the tax increases will kill jobs and drive businesses out of the state. But DFL Senate Majority Leader Tom Bach of Cook said the CEOs he's met with place greater importance on the state workforce.
This state is going to be successful if we have the best workforce around. And lower taxes would be nice. but we have to continue to invest in what has made you strong. And I would argue, and I think the CEOs that I met with would argue, it's been the investment that Minnesota's made in its workforce that have created all these Fortune 500 companies here and all the vendors that serve them.
DFL leaders were unable to reach a final agreement for a minimum wage increase. Bach said he expects a bill to be passed next session. Lawmakers return for the 2014 session in late February. Tim Pugmire, Minnesota Public Radio News at the Capitol.
Many Minnesotans will remember 2013 as the year the state legalized same-sex marriage, but that's led to a backlash in some legislative districts. Opponents of gay marriage filed recall petitions against two Minnesota House members from the Brainerd area who supported the bill. But as Mark Sedeklik reports, the Chief Justice of Minnesota's Supreme Court has denied those petitions.
Doug Kern filed petitions which he hoped would lead to recall elections of DFL State Representatives Joe Radinovich of Crosby and John Ward of Baxter. The two voted in favor of legalizing same-sex marriage, even though majorities of their constituents voted last fall to ban it in the Constitution. In dismissing the recall petitions, Chief Justice Lori Gilday said the filings failed to allege specific facts that could constitute grounds for a recall. Gilday said the Minnesota Supreme Court has said recall elections are not designed for constituents who disagree with an elected official's positions or voting record. Last week, Governor Mark Dayton signed the bill which allows for same-sex marriages in Minnesota beginning in August. Mark Sedeklik, Minnesota Public Radio News.
It's the NPR News Update, Minnesota's news on your schedule. Thousands of soldiers from Minnesota, home from the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan, are living with physical pain from injuries that are not immediately obvious. Data obtained by Minnesota Public Radio News from the Department of Veterans Affairs show a dramatic increase in chronic back, neck, hip, knee, and shoulder injuries over the past decade. Some of these injuries were combat-related. Others are the result of the dangerous jobs many military members perform. But as Jess Mador reports, many of the injuries are caused by the very equipment meant to protect soldiers from harm.
Begin a deep breath. All the way up. Okay, good.
6'2", former Army paratrooper Patrick Nelson sits on an examination table wearing a paper gown. A chiropractor checks Nelson's breathing, heart rate, and blood pressure. Then he asks Nelson where he hurts.
Got some back pain. Tell me a little bit about that. Is it mid-back, low-back, neck?
Usually it's all over. It's my entire back. Yeah, specifically the worst pain is kind of the mid-back on both sides of the spine.
Besides the back pain, Nelson also suffers from migraine headaches and severe shoulder and neck pain. He moves stiffly and has trouble bending over to reach his toes. In Afghanistan in 2005, Nelson survived a deadly explosion that killed two soldiers he was with. His body is still riddled with shrapnel. Covering his biggest scar is a tattoo of a cross that he got after the explosion. On the cross is the date of the attack and the initials of a friend who died. Since that day, Nelson, who now lives in Eden Prairie, has been taking painkillers. He's up to 8 Vicodin pills a day, but it no longer dulls his ache. Doctors have diagnosed this veteran of 3 tours in Iraq and Afghanistan with a shoulder injury, bulging discs, and a degenerative arthritis condition in his back. He's also got PTSD and a possible brain injury. His injuries affected his military service.
It just started to go downhill after a while, and I found myself, you know, it was tough to keep up with, you know, those young paratroopers who were running circles around me.
He left the military in 2008.
Made the decision to get out, and the pain just progressively got worse and worse. It makes me feel a lot older than I am, I think.
Nelson is 30 years old. He's just one of thousands of Minnesota veterans living with chronic pain from a group of service-related conditions known as musculoskeletal disorders. That's a medical category of physical conditions affecting bones, muscles, joints, ligaments, nerves, and tendons. These injuries can happen suddenly or develop over time. NPR News analyzed data showing every diagnosis doctors gave veterans at VA hospitals across the state between 2003 and 2012. The data show a steep rise in these problems among veterans over the last decade. In 2012, the VA saw veterans with joint disorders at least 35,000 times. That's more than double the number a decade ago. Back disorders and neck disorders have also more than doubled over the decade. Nationally, according to a report by the Federal Veterans Benefits Administration, these and other musculoskeletal conditions were the number one service-connected disability for veterans every year from 2007 to 2011. Veteran Patrick Nelson wanted to serve his country even after being injured. He felt suffering with back pain in combat was something he just had to accept, or as they say in the military, just suck it up.
I mean, it was my job at the time. I didn't really have an option. I wasn't the type of guy to go and raise my hand and say, I don't think I can do this one. You know, you trained with those guys for so long. I'd already deployed twice. It's not like I was scared or, you know, didn't know what I was getting into.
Medics in the mountains of Afghanistan would sometimes shoot him full of muscle relaxer to ease his pain. Now that he's home, Nelson wants his pain to go away for good. His search for relief has led him to this clinic in Bloomington. It offers military veterans free chiropractic, acupuncture, and other treatments.
Now let's have you lie onto your stomach.
Chiropractor works on Nelson's back with his hands.
Is that tender?
Yeah.
Worse on one side or the other?
On the right side.
Like right here?
Yeah.
Sorry about that.
After an adjustment, Nelson says he feels better, but he knows his pain will only come right back in a few hours. The VA has classified Nelson as 90% disabled and sends him a disability check every month. Despite his high disability rating, Nelson works as an event coordinator for a nonprofit golf organization. He spends much of every day trying to ignore his pain.
I would give anything to be pain-free right now and not get that check every month and just to live a normal life.
But not all cases of back, neck, and joint pain are caused by injuries as dramatic as Nelson's. In fact, it's likely the increase in these conditions is directly related to the equipment soldiers carry and the body armor they wear to stay safe. At a Minnesota National Guard armory in St. Paul, two soldiers unhook the Velcro straps on a body armor vest. The vest is made of Kevlar. Inside are pockets for inserts of hard ceramic or metal. The high-tech plates on the front, back, and side of the vest protect a soldier's vital organs from bullets and shrapnel. I try it on to see how it feels. The weight of the vest presses down on my lungs.
So how much does this weigh?
Sergeant First Class Tavis Pike tells me this one weighs about 30 pounds, but...
When you're over in combat, we actually get a little bit thicker plate, and then with the side stuff and then all your ammunition, probably gets closer to 60.
He means 60 pounds, but that's just the vest. Guard soldiers on foot also wear helmets and backpacks loaded with equipment, ammunition, batteries, food, water. They also carry rifles weighing at least 16 pounds. Minnesota National Guard Staff Sergeant Scott Stadola says soldiers are resigned to their heavy loads.
As far as the weight of the equipment, it's uncomfortable and people complain about it like crazy because it's so heavy and it seems like an outrageous amount of weight. But it's really not that bad once you've gotten used to it a little bit. You don't definitely want to be walking 20 miles every day, but the one or two times you have to take a long walk, it's not that terrible.
To soldiers in the field, it's better to be uncomfortable but safe. But the weight of added protection could mean more damage to troops. According to the U.S. Army, the combat load for a rifleman on operation weighs as much as 170 pounds. The Army Chief of Staff recommends soldiers lug no more than 50 pounds.
There's an old saying in the Army that they used to treat the soldiers like Christmas trees and just see how much stuff they could hang on them.
Dr. Paul Huddleston is an orthopedic surgeon at Mayo Clinic. He's also a colonel in the Army Reserve Medical Corps who deployed four times, three to Iraq and once to Afghanistan. Huddleston says that while individual equipment has gotten lighter over the years, there's now more of it, including the latest body armor.
You know, with those big heavy packs on, it's hard to even stand. People hurt their knees and backs acutely. Just walking around with all that, shoulder injuries are not uncommon.
Huddleston believes National Guard and Reserve soldiers may be at even greater risk for injury.
And I say that from having worn that equipment, but also having been a physician in the field taking care of the soldiers who were injured carrying that stuff also.
National Guard and Reserve soldiers tend to be older than their active duty counterparts. They're more susceptible to wear and tear. The Army has acknowledged that too much weight can fatigue, injure, and slow soldiers down in dangerous situations. The military is working on developing technology in an effort to provide better protection for troops while also cutting their weight. But in the meantime, record numbers of returning veterans are seeking help for injuries related to the weight they carry. Still, those injuries aren't getting the kind of attention more dramatic injuries like PTSD get, says Ramsey County Veterans Services Director Maria Weatherall.
Unfortunately, it's not a very glamorous issue. You've got a back problem. We've all got a back problem. I mean, sometimes I think they're not as sympathetic as they don't present as well.
Weatherall says the Department of Defense and the VA need to do more to prevent injuries in the first place and to help injured troops once they're home. Jess Mador, Minnesota Public Radio News.
And that'll do it for the NPR News Update for Tuesday, May 21st. I'm Matt Sepik. Thanks for downloading.